Okay, today I'm going to talk about dependent origination, sometimes called conditioned arising. And I will be talking about the chart right next to me, and as you can see, it looks pretty complicated. One of the things I wanted to ask is, how many are familiar with the concept of independent of dependent origination and conditioned arising?
今天呢，我要讲的是十二因缘法然后呢，在讲的时候，我会引用我旁边的这个图表。我想问一下，有在座有多少人听过十二因缘法？请举手。
Okay, that's good. So some people I know have probably memorized it, know it quite well, and some people are not very familiar with the basic concept. So we're going to cover the basics, of course, and get into some of the details.
很好看来有些人呢甚至已经都记住了十二因缘法有些人可能还不了解没关系，我们今天会首先介绍一些基本观念，然后呢我们就其中具体的一些东西会谈一下。
So if somebody walked in and just looked at this chart and had no idea about dependent arising and no idea about any of these things here, they really wouldn't know what to make of it. They might think it was an astrological chart or some scientific diagram of a particle accelerator.
所以假如你是一个从来没有听过十二因缘法的人，你正好走进来，然后看到旁边这幅图画图表的时候，你可能会觉得这到底是什么呢？看上去像一幅占星图，或者是就像科学家画的一个什么粒子加速器。
So the reason that this is complex, this diagram, is because we are complex. We are very, very, very complicated kinds of beings. How many of us actually understand ourselves perfectly?How many of us really know why we do certain things in certain situations, how we react in certain situations? How many of us feel confused, ambivalent about things, don't really know quite what to do and when to do it? And some of us feel that way sometimes, some of us feel that way most of the time, and that's why many, many peopleGo to psychotherapists.
这幅图表之所以看上去这么复杂的原因呢，是因为其实是因为我们作为一个个体来说是非常复杂的。比如说，我们当中有多少人能说对自己是非常了解的呢？我们当中有多少人有时候会就是说感到很惊讶，自己怎么会在这种场景下会做出这样的反应？我们是不是有时候也会感到很困惑，或者感到模棱两可？有时候在我们日常生活中发生的一些状况，有时候我们是不是也不知道，也不确定该怎么做呢？
So many of these difficulties that we have, these parts of ourselves that are inaccessible can become clearer when we delve into a study of dependent arising and we start to look at this teaching more clearly, because the whole thrust of Buddhism, as Buddha said, my teaching has one taste and it's liberation. So what this is, as complicated as it might look right now, is reallya way to approach and understand ourselves.
所以呢我们对自己很多不了解的地方，或者被自己的一些反应所困惑的地方，可以通过十二因缘法呢来得到一些帮助。因为正如佛陀所说的，佛法只有一个目标，就是说让我们得到解脱。
All of this complexity that you see on the board is based on a very simple formula, and I will read that, and I will go over each part of it to make it clearer. The formula is, when this exists, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. When this does not exist, that cannot come to be. When this ceases, that ceases.
所以这幅看似很复杂的图表呢，其实是基于一个非常简单的一个方程式。也就是说，当一样东西存在的时候，另一个东西也会存在。当一样东西升起的时候，另一个东西也升起了。当一样东西不再存在的时候，当另一个东西也不再存在了。当这样东西消失的时候，另一样东西也消失了。
Okay, to break this down a little, go over each section of that to make it a little more concrete and accessible. When this exists, that comes to be. So, to sit in this Dharma hall, it had to be built, and it had to be built out of trees, and metal had to be mined from the ground, ore had to be mined and fashioned into the chairs we're sitting on.The paint had to be created to paint the walls. A lot of things had to exist and had to be worked upon before this place where we're sitting could actually come into existence.
好，现在我就具体讲一下每一个部分到底是怎么一回事。比如说第一部分是说，当一个存在一个东西存在的时候，另一个东西也会存在。打比方。我们之所以能够坐在这个禅堂的前提条件是首先有树被砍伐了之后，树可以用来建造这个殿堂，然后还有有一些画呀能够被布置起来，还有一些整个殿堂已经被油漆过，就会有很多在我们能够坐在这里，还有椅子啊都已经到位，在我们能够坐在这里听讲之前已经有很多东西存在了。
The next section of that formula. With the arising of this, that arises. So if you get punched in the arm or something falls on your foot, pain arises at that moment. If a jealous thought comes into your mind, that might engender a thought of anger. One thing causes the next thing.
然后第二部分他讲到如果一样东西升起的时候，另一样东西也会升起。比如说，你被人打了一下，在被人打了一下的话，你肯定会感到痛。所以先被打，然后感到痛。第二个是，如果你起了一个念头，比如说是一个嫉妒的念头，那么你可能会比较生气。所以一个念头先升起了，然后另一种感觉也升起。
Third part, when this does not exist, that does not come to be.So if your bank didn't exist, if there were no banks, you could not put in or take out money. Money might not exist. One thing has to be present in order for the other thing to start to function.
第三部分是说，如果一个东西不存在，那么另一个东西也不可能存在。就比如说，如果这个世界上没有银行，那么你就没有办法把你的钱放进或者从银行取出。
With the cessation of this, that ceases. So when your battery runs out, your iPhone or your whatever kind of phone you might have is no longer operational. If the Apple factory closes, there are no more iPads.
最后一部分是讲，当一样东西停止消失的时候，另一样东西也会消失。比如说你手机已经没有电了，那么你就没有办法再用你的手机了。如果比如说苹果制造商全部关门了，那么是世界上也就没有这个苹果机了。
This is fairly straightforward what I've said. I wanted to flesh out that formula so it doesn't seem quite so abstract. All of the concerns in dependent arising affect us throughout our lives and at every moment.
这个听上去是相当，刚刚我说的是非常简单的，但是呢，虽然这个道理在后面是非常简单，但我还是想讲一下，因为我不像大家认为这个方程式是非常抽象的，因为实际上，这些定律是时时刻刻影响我们生活的。
So when we talk about conditioned arising, and we talk about these 12 links, we're really not that interested in buildings or iPhones. We're really talking about us. We're talking about human beings and how we work. And it's important. This teaching is often presented, but it's not always made clear why it's presented and how important it is. And that's one of the things that I'm going to cover.
当我们在看着这个图表的时候，我们并不是说只是讲到啊苹果机或者什么，我们更多的是想要了解我们自己，我们是怎么运作的。所以啊，我们一般讲到啊十二因缘的时候，我们不是把它作为一个理论，而是运用到我们个人身上，看我们在这个理论下是如何运作，去更好的了解我们自己。这就是我今天所要讲的。
Speaking of conditioned arising, one thing leading to another, all of us are here, directly or indirectly, because of the first noble truth of Buddhism, the truth of suffering. All of us are here, either deeply or somewhat interested about the teaching, and also about discovering something about ourselves, about our suffering, our difficulties.We're looking for a way out in many ways.
讲到十二因缘法啊，首先要讲到我们今天之所以会坐在这里，啊，或多或少都是间接或者直接的，因为啊，四圣谛的第一圣谛是说，就是说苦，就是很多原因是因为我们想要解脱，我们想要出离。
So the first noble truth, the truth of dukkha.Is often described as unease, unsatisfactoriness, and I recently heard it described as chronic frustration. It's something that is with us throughout our life.
当然第一圣谛讲的就是苦，就是通常我们所说的感觉不称心如意啊，还有感觉很感到长期的受挫呀。
In one sense, I don't think I really have to convince people of this. Most people believe it. And of course, we do believe it to a certain extent, but in other ways, we don't. We look at the way that we go through our lives, and we may feel that most of the time, we're really doing okay. There are a few problems that we have, a few things that we want. If we could just end those particular problems and get those few things that we want, then...Everything would be fine. But deeper investigation reveals that this is really not the case. We may get a promotion that we want, or the new car that we've been hankering after, and we may recover from a disease that we certainly didn't want, or we may be able to avoid some person that we really don't like. But we can't avoid old age and death.No matter how many reward points you get on your credit card, these things cannot be avoided.
所以第一圣谛关于这个苦谛，我想啊，看上去好像我不用再跟大家说了，因为大家都经历过，大家都会觉得多多少少有一些经历。但大家仔细想一下，却发现并不是所有的人都深深的这个理解苦谛到底是什么含义，因为在很多时候我们回想一下自己的生活，感觉大部分时候还是可以的，只是好像生活中只是有这么一两个问题或者几个问题我们希望能够按照我们的意愿发生，但是实际上如果我们仔细的想一下，会发现其实情况并不是这样子的。比如说我们一直想要升职，假设我们一直想要升职，如果我们真的升职了，或者说你一直想要一辆新车，然后你真的有了那辆新车，或者说当然我们没有人希望生病，所以假设说你能够不生病，然后又说你讨厌一些人，不希望见到他，你也成功的做到了回避这些人，但是就算我们能够让这些我们所期望的事情都称心如意的话，我们始终无法回避两件事情，一个是我们的衰老，还有一个是死亡。
From this understanding of the first noble truth, from the investigation of the first noble truth. We then look further into why is this happening? Why are we in a state of chronic frustration and dissatisfaction? What are the causes of this? And this is what the second noble truth is about. Of course, we know about greed, hatred, and ignorance on some level. But how well do we really understand these things, and how well do we understand how they work and how we suffer from them?
当然从苦地第一苦地第一圣地苦地延伸出来的就是第二圣地就是说我们在第一步仔细的研究探讨第一步研究探讨承认我们有这种长期的挫败感感到非常苦非常不满意的时候我们会想要知道是什么让我们产生这种长期的挫败感 长期的不能感到称心如意这种感觉就是苦因第二圣就是苦因到底是什么造成了这些苦我们就很想知道背后的原理到底是什么是什么造成了这些当然我们都听说过都了解什么是贪嗔痴但是我们还是不太清楚它到底是怎么在我们身上运作的
So the 12 links of dependent originationis the user's guide to the second noble truth. So if you hired a contractor to renovate your house, the contractor would go through your house and note all the things that had to be fixed or changed. And that would be a punch list, the list of all the things that have to be changed. And the 12 links is this punch list. This is the things that we have to look at in order to change from a state of ignorance, a state of suffering, to a state of wisdom.
所以呢，十二因缘法呢，就像是这个知道我们为什么受苦的一个用户手册一样。如果说假设你招了一个建筑工、合同工，然后你希望把你的房子重新装修一下，那么他可能会给你开出一个清单，就是说哦，你需要做如下这些事情，然后我们就是你的房子可以被重新更新一下。然后这个十二因缘法呢，就如同这个清单一样，它列出了如何能够让你从这个贪嗔痴的这种状态向智慧这个状态转变。
One problem I found in studying this and explaining.The 12 links is that you can make two general kinds of mistakes in presenting it. One, you can either approach it in a very, very general manner, and it might not sink in that way. And then another error that you can make is that you get lost in the details, because as we'll see, the details are very intricate and take a lot of study and thought in order to penetrate. And in this talk, I'll probably make a little bit of both those errors, but I'm just giving a heads up that this is one of the difficulties in presenting this teaching.
所以在学习十二因缘法的过程中呢，我观察到一般呢，我们会犯两种错误。第一种呢，是过于抽象概括的来学习这个理论，感觉就没有办法跟我们生命结合，没有办法深入。第二种常见的错误呢，就是说被一些细枝末节呢给纠缠住了，而没有办法能够获得整个的感觉，只是被细枝末节上下功夫，在细枝末节上下功夫。在今天我的讲座中，我会注意这两种趋势，然后指出希望我们能更好的学习。
Okay, in traditional Buddhism, we would say that these 12 links.Are more real than what you think the reality of your life is. So we look at ourselves, and consciously or unconsciously, we have this idea, well, I'm a banker, I'm a lawyer, I'm a street sweeper. I live in a particular city. I have a particular neighborhood that I relate to. I have friends, family, neighbors, a variety of people I interact with.As well as institutions and organizations. This is generally how we identify ourselves.
在传啊、在传统的佛教中呢，我们会认为啊、十二因缘其实是描绘了真正的现实状况，比我们个人所感受到的、所认为的现实状况还要真实。我们在现实层面或者在啊、潜意识层面会有这样一种认识，认为哦，我是一个银行家，我是一个律师，哦，或者我是一个扫街的，我住在这样一个城市，我有这些啊、我有这些社会呀、政治观点，然后哦，我有父母，有小孩，有朋友，有这样一些社会关系，这是通常是就是我们就是通常从这样的角度来认识自我的。
So in traditional Buddhism, and this is going to be something of an overstatement, but just to make it clear, they might say, well, okay, this functioning of the 12 dependent links is real, and your lives are an illusion. We don't quite look at it this way in Chan. Right? We don't make those kind of distinctions. In Chan, we're making more of a distinction that we are in a state of illusion and we're interpreting and experiencing the world in a way that is of our own making, that is not really in accord with what's actually happening around us.
嗯，所以呢，当然我们说啊，十二因缘法才是真正的现实，才真正的真实存在的，而我们日常生活中所对自我的认识都是幻觉的话，我们这会显得过于简单的一个概括，但我们传统佛教可能会做这样概括。但是在特别对于禅来说，对于我们禅宗来说，我们通常是会做两种划分，一种是说我众生存在中一种幻觉当中，就是说生存的它的状态是一种幻觉的状态，或者是说呢，他认识到，他知道他正在啊、感受经历的，其实所有的东西，所有的现象，其实是他啊、他自己新的创造。
Nevertheless, we're talking about our lives, you and me, our problems, our concerns. That's really the focus here, and not a bunch of abstractions. So,When we talk about who we are, what it means to be a person, what constitutes a human being. In Buddhism, the basic view is that we are composed of five skandhas. Now, in Western understanding, I don't think anyone would have too difficult a time accepting that we are mind and body. I think it'sPretty reasonable. In Buddhism, this is further defined in saying the body is form, it's appearance, the way that the senses react to our particular physicality, and our mind is sensation, perception, volition, and consciousness. And of course, those attributes, all of them, all the five skandhas are contained within the 12 links of dependent origination.
当然我们在这里谈的真的是我们每个人都会遇到的一些问题啊，我们一些日常生活中会产生的一些问题，而不是说一些抽象的理论。所以我们比较想问的一个问题到就是我们到底是谁，我们到底是如何运作的。当然在佛教理论上会认为呢，从佛教理论上会认为我们人是五蕴合而成的。那么通常会把人分为两就是组成会分两种，就是说身和心组成的，是由身和心组成。那么身就是我们所谓的物质体，是一种色相。那么心呢又会由会受想行识这个四个部分组成，所以就是加起来就是五蕴色受想行识。
So the five skandhas, which are drawn there on the left, the form, sensation, perception, volition, and consciousness, that is who we are and what we are. Now, the 12 links, these number 12, this is how and why we are. So the 12 links constitute the audit trail, if you will, of how we got to where we are. The 12 links are the anatomy of suffering. They're the operational guide to our illusions about who we are, and especially the illusion of self. You could write a big S over all of the 12 links of dependent origination, and that S would stand for the self, the illusion of self.
五蕴呢告诉了我们到底是谁，我们到底是由什么组成的。然后十二因缘法呢就告诉我们，解释了我们为什么会这样，我们为什么会是有这些组成的，我们为什么会是这样现在这样一种状态，还有我们到底是怎么运作的。然后这些东西组合起来就能够解释一个自我这样一个状态。
So if the five skandhas were a watch, the 12 links would be the watch factory.And as to why we want to understand and to penetrate the 12 links, I think the real reason is that nobody likes to be fooled. Nobody likes to have the wool pulled over their eyes. So if I tried to offer mean here, a $5 bill in exchange for two $10 bills, I don't think I could fool her. Right? She wouldn't go for it. So I would be trying to swindle her. And so the 12 links show us how we have been swindled.
所以说为什么说十二因缘法是非常重要呢？因为五蕴如果说是一个手表的话，那么十二因缘法就像是生产这个手表的工厂。所以说而没有人呢喜欢被占便宜或者被耍。比如说我如果给一个人我用五块钱去换两张十块钱，那个人肯定不会愿意，肯定不会乐意去这样做，因为我只是想要去欺骗他或者困惑他。所以十二因缘法就告诉我们到底是怎样的被迷惑了。
And to cement how important the study of the 12 links are, let me quote something from the sutras. When Ananda was with the Buddha, and he was sitting there, and he said to the Blessed One, "It's amazing, Lord, it's astounding how deep this dependent co-arising is, how deep its appearance, and yet to me it seems as clear can be." And the Buddha said, "Don't say that, Ananda, don't say that. Deep is this dependent co-arising. And deep its appearance. It's because of not understanding and not penetrating this Dharma, and that this generation is like a tangled skein, a knotted ball of string, like matted rushes and reeds, and does not go beyond transmigration, beyond the plains of deprivation, woe, and bad destinations."
所以要解释十二因缘法呢，我们首先回到佛经当中看如何他们是如何阐述的。有一次就是阿难在跟佛陀在一起的时候呢，他坐在佛陀的旁边说：“哎呀，佛陀呀，这个十二因缘法真的是非常让人惊叹，非常的让人惊异。然后这个十二因缘法的确是非常深奥。”美妙，但是它虽然显得非常深奥呢，但是它也是对我而言，它也是再清楚不过的一个道理了。然后佛陀这个时候就说：“阿难啊，不要这么说，不要这么说啊！十二因缘法，它看上去是非常深奥，它实际上也是非常非常深奥，只是就是因为我们不明白，或者说没有彻底的理解。”这个十二因缘法才让众生生生世世啊，就像一个被打了结的各种各样被打了结的球一样，无法的超越这个生死，无法的超越这种坏的命运。
Remember, there are universes where no Buddha exists, and Sometimes within those universes, there are beings, very, very clever beings, who discover the 12 links of dependent origination on their own and become pratyeka Buddhas, lonely Buddhas. Now, we don't have to worry about that because we have the Dharma in this world and we can learn it. But I'm doing all this to emphasize the importance of the teaching. And in some ways, I think if I ended the lecture right now, in one sense, I would have done my duty in stressing how important these teachings are and exhorting people to really look deeper and find out how they work and how they can be understood in their lives.
当然呢，在有些世界当中，我们知道是没有佛陀的，但是那些众有在那些世界中的众生仍然能够自己懂得、自己明白这个十二因缘法，所以呢，他们可以成为独觉者。当然，我们不用担心，因为在我们这个世界，我们是有佛陀的。
So how can we approach these teachings? Well,it's probably appropriate at this time to go over the 12 links and introduce the players in this particular drama. And as you can see up here, and once again, one could give a full lecture on any one of these links, but I just want to go over them briefly. Ignorance and delusion, booming, and karma,Xing, this is, there are many, many ways that this is translated. It can be karma, mental formations, intention, fabrication, memory. And this karma, this Xing, and that Xing, volition, in the five skandhas are identical. It's the same thing.
Okay, sure. 好，现在我就要对于十二因缘法的每一个元素一一进行解答，这样子可能大家会有一个总体的了解。当然了，每一个十二因缘法的每一个元素都是可以做一个整场的讲座的，所以我现在会讲的比较概括。第一个是无明，第二个是讲的是行，这个行呢在对应五蕴当中四受想行识的行呢，两个是一样的意思。
And then consciousness, which is a kind of awareness, and as Master Sheng Yan defines it as itself like karma is a force that is initiated and filtered by ignorance and delusion, and this force comes into being in our awareness. And then there is name and form is our physical and mental attributes. Sometimes I've seen it also as physical and mental energies. Actually, I was talking to a friend who knows nothing about Buddhism, and she thought that name of course, is really the consciousness part, that it really wasn't a very a good way of describing this. And I tried to explain, well, in the ancient teachings, they use very simple labels in order to describe a variety of things.
然后第三个元素是识，这个识呢，就是说意识啊，我们人的这个感觉啊，意识。第四个呢是名色，第四个link 是名色的意思，名色就是说，主要是说我们的身心的一些特征。
Okay, and then the six, and also, of course, the name and form is really the fetus, the baby. When actual birth is taking place in this physical world. And then as the fetus develops, and actually Master Sheng Yan said at 3 months, the six sense bases come into being. Those are our six senses. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thought. And these are this is how we get information from the world and also how we interact when we move out into the world.
然后在第四个元素名色的上也可以理解，就是说从出生的角度去理解的话，这就是像入胎，然后有这个胎儿。 然后到第五个环节是六入，就是说三个月以后胎儿开始长出这个眼耳长出这个各个六个器官，眼耳鼻舌身的这个器官。
Okay, so contact is probably fairly simple. This is how the senses interact with the world. When a sense organ like my eye sees a chair, a sense object, that there's contact, and that's and also of course consciousness arises from that. And be going over how these all of these links interact with one another.
然后第六个是触，就是说，当你有这个六根以后，你这个六根是如何跟外界进行这个接触的，比如说你有眼根，你有眼睛，然后可以看到椅子，然后在你眼睛看到椅子那一个就相处的过程。
So once this information has comes in, then we have a reaction to it, which is of three types: pleasurable, pleasant, or an unpleasant and neutral. And also, I heard a tape of Master Shengyan. He broke it into five. Really, the same of happiness and bliss and sadness and sorrow and equanimity. But basically, positive, negative, and neutral.
然后第七个叫受，受就是说从第六个出发，就是当你的六根跟外面的六尘相接触以后呢，你会产生一种感觉，这种感觉通常会分为三类，一类就是说会产生很开心、很喜欢的一种感觉，或者产生不喜不乐的一种中性的感觉，还第三种就是说产生不喜欢、讨厌、悲伤的这样一种负面的感觉。
So once we have this contact and feeling, then actually because of everything that's come before, because of how we're constituted.We then may have a feeling of desire. And desire, of course, which is, it's I in Chinese, which is the word literally for love, but it can also mean hate. It can mean aversion. It's that kind of wanting to grab or to push away. And there are, you know, in the sutras and the Abhidharma, there are many, many descriptions of the types of desire. It can be love, hatred, jealousy,lack of confidence. It can also be, there are positive ones also, like concentration and mindfulness qualities that can arise.
然后从第一个到第七个到第七个元素，我们刚刚上面所讲的都是说到我们是如何形成的。然后到第八，就是从第七步进一步延续到第八个，这个我们的欲望起来的时候，就是说第七，由于我们产生了喜欢、不喜欢，还有不苦不乐这样一种三种感受之后呢，我们会产生第八个一种，中文这里说爱，其实也可以包括恨啊，包括其他的一些积极或不积极的一些状态的产生，比如说就非常想要占有啊，非常想要拥有的这样一种欲望，就是第八个。
And once these desires have arisen, then there is a tendency to act on them, to solidify the desire and want what we desire to actually happen in the world. And then that is clinging, true. And Tanisaro Biko has a very good way of distinguishing these two. He says that if you're a thief and you're in a house and you're...in the process of robbing it, and you see a beautiful golden candlestick, you have this desire to steal it. So you reach out, and the moment you grab it, that is clinging. So it's kind of a desire turned into action. And of course, therefore, it's very much related to karma, to what, to generating an act coming out of our own self-interest, our own sense of self.
然后第九个元素是取，从这个欲望到取，这个过程是怎么发生的呢？就比如说 就像一个小偷进入一个屋子想要盗窃的时候，他看到了一个由金子做的非常漂亮的烛台。当他看到这个烛台的时候，他产生了一种强烈的想要占有的这样一种欲望。那么这种欲望就是这种第八个因素啊，这种欲望产生。然后当他伸手想要去取，就是抓到那个瞬间呢，他就上升到第九个元素，就是这种紧抓紧取啊。当然这种由一种意识状态而最后转化为一种行动，这种第九个元素跟我们刚刚第二个元素说到的行呢有相似的地方，它都是一种力量，都是一种由你的意识所驱动而变成一种行为的一种力量。然后到去
The tenth is becoming. Now in Chinese of course it's you, which means to have. And this I've always found to be somewhat abstract, and I've read a fair amount about it and have a much better understanding than I used to. And it's really the idea of everything being in place. Like, let's say you're the thief and you've got this candlestick, and now you have this story, you have this thought. It's completed. I have stolen this. I've got something now. That's becoming. It's, you know, you want to become a doctor. You apply to medical school.You're entering there and you sort of say to yourself, I'm a doctor to be, I'm an intern or whatever. So the idea has coalesced. It's really come together. Another way that I often think about it is if you think of everything up to becoming as kind of going up the hill for a roller coaster. It's going up the hill and finally it's at the top.Everything is in place, and now gravity can start to play its role, and it comes crashing down. That's when at that moment, when everything is in place, that's becoming.
然后第十个因素是有，从第九步到第十步是怎样一个过程呢？就是说，就用刚刚我们说的小偷的那个例子，小偷看到那个烛台，做金子做烛台很喜欢，然后他产生了这样一个想要占有的欲望，然后他又伸手拿过去，这样的过程是一个取的过程，最后呢他的确占有了这个烛台，他自己认为所有的因素都已经完成了，所有动作都完成，他已经确确实实的成为这个烛台的主人了，这就所谓的有。从另再打一个比方，就比如有一个人想要报考医学院，然后他通过申请啊考试啊，然后最后他的确入学了，就所有的因素都到位了，那他就会说啊，我已经是这个医学院的学生了。就好比一个过山车，从前面第一到第九步的过程当中都是逐步向上爬，过山车逐步向上爬，然后到第十步的时候就是说过山车达到它顶峰，就所有的因素就具备了，然后再下来就是要开始重力起作，就要开始降落了。
And finally, birth, old age, and death. And you might think that seems to be fairly straightforward, cut and dry. But I'm not so sure. Because we're alive right now. What is our understanding of what that actually means? We have an understanding of death. We've lost people. But how deep is our real understanding? Is that a real appreciation, a real... actual contact with and appreciation of reality, or is it something where we're really lost in our concepts about things? But once again, fairly straightforward: birth, old age, and death.
然后剩下的两步是生还有老死。这三个概念听上去好像很简单，但是因为我们比如说到死，大家都会多多少少有一个认识啊，我们都在生活中曾经失去过亲人啊，然后都经历过知道什么叫死亡，但是但我不是很确定这生老死这些是不是看上去那么简单，因为我们很可能还是没有理解它真正的含义。
So once again, gone through all 12 links, In not great detail, just really identifying them. And I think for someone who's hearing it for the first time or even a number of times, it's still rather abstract. It's, it seems like philosophical ideas, even though, once again, this is something that is corroborated and experienced in meditation, right? Not everyone can experience all of the things in here, like karma and consciousness or ignorance. I mean, those would be something that a very advanced practitioner would do. But that's a general picture of how the 12 links work. And just to give one important thing, I think, in approaching this, and once again, in this talk, I'm really trying to convey a sense of interest and enthusiasm about this and to show how important they are and how important it might be to study them further. In that spirit, the traditional teaching is that, once again, these 12 links constitute our lives from birth to death. Right now, I'll let...
当然了，如果我刚刚就介绍完了这十二因缘法的各个元素，当然我只是讲的比较简单，没有讲太详细但是对于第一次听闻或者了解十二因缘法的人，或者甚至有些人已经听过好几次了，仍然会有这种感觉，好像觉得十二因缘法还是比较的抽象比较理论化，好像不知道如何跟自己的生活进行结合。虽然实际上我们时时刻刻都在经历这些，在体验这些十二因缘法。当然，只有就修行比较好，在禅修状态非常好的、禅修比较深的一些修行者，才能够体验到无明行啊，还有识这几个，或者还有无明之类的。当然，在这个讲座当中，我想说服大家的，或者传达表达的这个意思呢，就是想希望大家能够对十二因缘法学习呢产生兴趣，并且能够理解到呢，它是非常重要的。
So in traditional teaching, these 12 links are further broken down into a past, a present, and a future life. And of course, that means all lives from time without beginning. Once again, one has to, you don't necessarily have to believe in reincarnation or rebirth, but it is part of the teaching. So...The past life is considered ignorance, karma, and consciousness. Sometimes, this, by the way, different schools in Buddhism and different commentators break it down differently. Some just say ignorance and karma, and then consciousness is in this life. But the point is that we have come from a past life.Already with the cards stacked against us in a way, and of course we're the ones who stack the cards, but we're already coming in not seeing the world very clearly because of what happened in a past life. And then in this life we are reacting to things through our senses and through duality, andWe're reacting from a sense of self, being caught in passion, caught in aversion, and not learning too much from our past life or in this life if we don't study the Dharma. And we end up still in a state of suffering, still in a state of delusion, and that generates the next life, which is birth and death.
然后十二因缘法呢也有人可以分类划分为三十因缘，当然各个学派呢有不同的划分方法，目前我们所用的就是说比如说十二因缘法第一个阶段到第三个阶段无明行识被划分为是过去式因缘，然后这一世的呢是从第四阶段一直到第十个阶段是这一世所经历的，然后在未来世呢是由十一和十二所组成的，也就是说如果 我们在这一世当中如果没有从以前的无量世当中学到经验，当然你不一定是说你一定要相信有再生才能够接受这样的理论，比如说如果你在这一世当中还是按照这个十二因缘法在运作，没有从潜意识当中学习到经验，在这一世也没有听闻佛法，那么很有可能在完成第十步的时候呢，你就会进入下一世，重新再来这样一个生死轮回。
Another interesting observation in this is that, so alright, this is a past life, ignorance, karma, consciousness, and this is another life, from consciousness all the way to becoming, and then next life, birth and death. Well, another way of looking at it, I mean, they're all lives. They're all complete lives. So each of these they're all equivalent. Each is a life, but they're looking at them from different angles. From looking at it so ignorance and karma and consciousness. Okay, fine. It may be from a past life, but we still have these things operative in this life. But by looking at them as a concrete, self-contained life, we're looking at things in a more internal way. We're looking at the more interior forces that are motivating us. And this life is more, once again, more obvious in the world, more interacting, more our everyday life, which we really are aware of, not necessarily in a correct way. We're still caught in our illusions, but we're generally aware that we're living and that we have things to do and we have responsibilities. That's this life. And then the last life, old age and death, is once again is perhaps the most the most eagle eye view of how our lives work, that it's from birth to death, death to birth, an endless cycle. So there are different ways of looking at the same thing.
就是虽然呢，这个十二因缘法可以被划分为三世，归纳为三世因缘，但实际上它是从不同的角度在看这个不同的三世。比如说从过去世讲到一和三，从第一步到第三步的时候，其实在当下是我们也是在经历这些第一步到第三步的过程，但是我们并不一定会意识到，因为它是一个比较内在的一种力量，让我们生命呈现出这种或那种状态的一种比较内在的力量。而从第四步到第十步的这个现在当下是因缘的时候，我们可能会比较能够意识到，因为我们当下能够感觉到这个感觉到那个是正在发生的事情。然后最后一世未来世是从十一到十二，就是从不断的生死轮回这个角度来看问题。
And finally, the last way of looking at it, and in some ways perhaps the most important, is that all of these 12 happen in every moment. This is continually recurring, because as the Buddha said to his monks, he said, O bhikkhus, know that in every moment you die, you decay, and you are reborn. In every moment. And so this is operative all the time. And once again, as I'm trying to do, I'm trying to take something which is quite abstract and make it real. And this is one way of looking at the 12 links.
还有一个角度我们可以理解十二因缘法是说在我们每一个当下，实际上时时刻刻都是十二因缘法在发生作用。我们每时每刻其实都在经历死生这样一个过程。
In my study of the 12 links, I seem to have a very literal, linear mind. So I would go through them 1, 2, 3, all the way up to 12 and learn them in that fashion.And there's certainly reason to do that. That's right in the Mahanidana Sutta. The Buddha explains how each one of these links is predicated on the next or the one before. So you can't have karma without ignorance, and you can't have consciousness without karma. And it goes, the sutra goes through and illuminates and elucidates those one by one all the way to 12, and then it does it backwards, saying that old age and death couldn't happen if you didn't have birth. Birth couldn't happen if you didn't have becoming. Becoming couldn't happen if you didn't have clinging. So there's a very literal or linear way, even though it's in a circle, but there's a kind of one, two, three, four, each one depending on the next. And this is, of course, very important and very accurate in the teaching.
在我学习十二因缘法的过程当中呢，我一直是从第一步一直学习到第十二步，感觉是一种线性的方式，在学习。因为也的确如此，因为第二个行如果没有第一步无明的话，它不会产生，而第三步识的产生又取决于行。名色产生取决于识，依此类推，一直到比如说生的前提条件是有，如果没有有就没有生，这都是相互取决的一种过程。
So if you remember, I said that perhaps the most important way or one very very important way of looking at the 12 links is that they are taking place right now in this moment. So.Going through this very linear way, one after the other way of understanding it, I found it somewhat complex and difficult because it's really hard to keep all that in mind and see how these links are working. So, as Vasubandhu said, all 12 links occur within one. All occur moment to moment. So in the spirit of trying to make that more accessible, I'm going to give three analogies that will show how dynamically interrelated and utterly dependent all of the links are on each and every one of them.
当然了，这十二因缘法的图表看上去是也组成了一个圆圈，但它实际上是正如我所说的是线性发生的，它是后一个因缘取决于前一个因缘，这样一步一环紧扣一环这样来，所以在学习的过程当中有时候呢也有一些困难，就感觉很难记住每一环。为了能够让十二因缘法大家能够更好的理解呢，我接下来打算举三个例子。
Okay, remember, so this is a metaphor. These are some metaphors I'm going to use to hopefully make this a little more accessible. And perhaps the metaphors break down at some point, but at least they should be easy to understand. First, let's just say ignorance was a t-shirt. And then karma was a shirt over that. And consciousness was a pair of pants. And...going through all of the links, each one is another article of clothing, so that by the time you get to old age and death, you're fully bundled up. You have all of these layers on you, and you're walking through the world. Could be a very hot day. Nonetheless, you're bundled up like a snowman. And it's such a point, you're so bundled up with all of these things that what you're really relating to is your clothing, in other words, which your illusions, rather than the world around you.
现在我就就大家分享一下我这三个比喻。比如说第一个比喻是第一个比喻是关于穿衣服，就比如说无名啊，就好像是这个第一个因缘就好像是我们穿上了一件 T 恤衫。然后这个第二因缘行呢，就像我们穿上另一件穿上了一件衬衫。然后第三步识呢，就好像我们穿上了一条裤子。所以你可以把这十二因缘就像比想象成身上所穿的衣服啊裤子啊这种衣服一件一件的往你身上穿，最后呢你可能穿的像一个冬天的被裹得很紧的一个人一样。 然后你穿着这些衣服，穿着这些十二因缘所组成的衣服呢，然后在这里，在这个人世间走来走去。每一次你说到我呢，实际上你是在指这些衣服，你所穿的这些衣服是一种幻觉。
Metaphor number two. Let's say the world, and the utterly clear, perfect world is seen through an open window.So we come along with ignorance and we put a glass pane on the window. So you're seeing the world, you'd see, but there's something there. And of course, this is a very good way of understanding ignorance because it is kind of invisible. And I hope to get to that later in the talk. So ignorance comes and puts a pane of glass. And then karma takes the window and shrinks it a little, maybe changes the shape and puts a tint, let's say blue, yellow, green, it doesn't really matter. And then each subsequent link in the chain is putting another tint, another color on the window, and it's shrinking, shrinking, shrinking until finally you're looking through the world through a small aperture that is pretty clouded.
第二个比喻呢，就是说我们如何来看这个世界，如果说是从一个开悟者的角度来看这个世界是没有任何玻璃阻挡的，而是就是能够直接看到，能够一望无际的话，那么我们众生就像是通过一层又一层彩色的玻璃在看这个世界。我们可以我们就从无明开始，无明呢就像是在这个玻璃上涂了一层蓝色的一层薄膜。然后接下来的各个环节呢，就在这个玻璃上不停地涂上各种各样其他的颜色，或者让你所能看到的清晰看到领域呢越来越小越来越小，到最后呢你能够看世界的这个视角啊，只能从一个非常小的非常模糊的被各种颜色所污染的点一个这样一个角度去看这个世界了。
Third metaphor, and this is a little different, but this is to show how these links are operative. And I'm going to use a kind of interesting, unusual analogy in order to explain this. And I'll explain exactly how I believe this should be understood and how it's useful. I'm going to talk about a play by an English playwright.Named Harold Pinter, and this play is called Betrayal, and it's written in the it was written in the 70s, I believe. And I'm going to take the plot, which is quite complicated, and explain it in a very simple manner. And I think the playwright would probably throw something at me if he were in the audience, but he isn't, so I can get away with it. This is a play. Want to translate that?
Mm-hmm.第三个比喻呢是一个70年代的英国的一个话剧。我会用一个比较简单的方式呢来告诉大家。当然话剧本身要比我所描绘的方式要复杂的多，所以如果剧作家正在这个坐在下面的话可能会不满意。不过现在因为他不坐在这里，所以我可以用我的方式来讲。
Okay, so this play is about romance and betrayal.Something that happens all the time. The play opens with two friends meeting. It's in the year 1977 when this happens. And it comes out after a while that one of the men has had an affair with the other man's wife. And this affair has gone on for 7 years. And they're just meeting and they're talking about it. And that's the opening of the play. So if you saw a play like this with this betrayal coming out, the first scene of the play, two friends meeting, well, you don't know quite what's going to happen. Are they going to get into a fight? Are they going to talk about new loves or new adventures, right? That's the opening, beginning with this betrayal. What's going to happen next?
所以这部话剧呢开场呢是两个人就是说在见面， 然后其中一个人呢跟另一个人的妻子呢有外遇，这部话剧是当然也是主题就是讲恋爱爱情啊还有背叛，是非常常见的主题。所以他开场的时候就是两个人见面，然后一个人跟另一个人的妻子呢有长达七年的婚外情。当然在开始的时候你不知道他将会怎么样，两个人是不是会打起来啊，还是会谈一些新的事情啊。
So what you would expect, the next scene, or what you might expect, the next scene, continuing from that opening, this admission of betrayal and of an affair, it doesn't happen like that in the play. The next scene is a year earlier, right? So, and the scene before that is a year earlier than that. So you actually see the breakup of the affair. And there's a lot of give and take and discussions and recriminations that happen between all of the characters. And then the play continues into the past to the point where the man who has the affair with the other man's wife first meets her and declares his love for her. In that way, so now you've seen everything that's happened. You've seen all of the anguish, all of the suffering that has happened. So now when you see what might have been the first scene in another play, but it's the last scene in this play. So you can't really fantasize about what's going to happen. If it were the first scene, if you saw two people and you knew there was an affair, you know, the human mind is very tricky. We, even though they're married and this and that, you might sort of hope that it's going to be very romantic or sexy or something, and who knows what your mind might do with it. But in this case, you know what's happened. So this initial meeting doesn't look very good at all because it's the end.
所以呢，这部戏剧的第一场开场白呢，就是说两个男人见面，然后一个男人向另一个男人承认他跟他的妻子有长达七年的婚外情，这是第一幕。那么一般人会想呢，第二幕肯定是讲将来会怎么样，两个人是不是会打起来，会很生气啊？但是很令人诧异的是，第二幕呢却是讲一年前发生的事情，是比如说那个婚外情的结束，两个人怎么分手的。然后在第三幕，在接下来几幕呢，都是逐步往前退，就直到退到最后一幕呢，是讲就是这个发生婚外情的这个男的是如何第一次遇到另一个他朋友的老婆的，就是说最后一幕，他是用一种倒叙的手法呢来讲到这个第一幕。所以非常有意思的是，因为人，我们人一般都会喜欢往，就是喜欢幻想或者联想将来的事情，所以说通常来说这部戏剧第一最后一幕往往是通常来说会是戏剧的第一幕，因为好像一个男的碰到一个女的他们快要产生婚外情了，这些好像大家会想象成很浪漫啊，或者讲的很有意思啊，会幻想将来。但是在这部戏剧当中你没有幻想的余地和空间，因为当你看到每一幕的时候，你都知道这些已经发生了，这是已经是以前的事情了。所以当你看到最后一幕的时候你并不一定会幻想连篇，因为你知道最后发生了什么。
So what is so important, or what's the point of this love gone bad, this description that I've just given in a play with what we're talking about here in the 12 links?Why I use this analogy is because what's very important in our understanding of how this works is having an understanding of karma, an understanding of how we react to the world and what the consequences are. Karma is generally known, I mean, it's a very common term these days. I mean, whether you're a Buddhist or not, many, many people know this term. It's pretty widespread. But it's often understood. Most people who really haven't studied Buddhism think karma is a kind of fate, right? So they'll say if they get a flat tire or they get a ticket on their car, they'll say, well, that's my karma. And what they mean is that, well, there's this thing happened to me. I really wish it hadn't, but I'm acknowledging it.
嗯，那么我为什么要谈到这个话剧呢？因为这个话剧它其实可以给我们让我们帮助我们更好的理解业是怎么运作的。因为业界的这个概念啊，在西方人当中已经非常普遍了，但是大家认识的角度却不一样。比如说，一般人会说：“哎呀，我今天被吃了罚单，或者我今天的车子被拖了啊，大概那是我的业吧。”但是在讲这个话的时候，他认为的业是一件已经发生了，他希望啊最好不要发生的一件事情。
So in that understanding of karma, that general understanding that people have, what it means is that I'm just a puppet, right? And there's some puppet master who's pulling my strings, and so something bad happened to me, and I don't know. Just sort of happened. I don't like it, but I guess it's my karma. That's the way a lot of people look at karma. But for a practitioner, we don't get confused, or we try not to get confused, about the difference between karma and the fruits of karma. Right? Karma is the action, and it's called in Sanskrit, it's karma phala or karma vipaka. That's the actions that we take will have a consequence. That's something we know. But what we, as practitioners, are more concerned about is the action in the moment, is understanding the clarity of mind and the following of precepts that is the environment in which we act. That is what's important about karma, is that we know that it's an act that we have done and that we take responsibility for.
所以呢，对作为普通人所理解的业呢，是好像啊，我们是自己不能成为自己的主人，好像有一个命运在操纵我们一样，我们就像一个木偶一样，这个听任命运的安排。但是作为佛教徒呢，我们对业的理解应该是不一样的，或者至少我们要努力的去这样的理解它。我们所理解的业呢，应该是一种行为，是当下的一种行为，它会产生一个怎样的后果，并且是所指的是一种清楚的一种意识状态，是你清楚的意识到当下如果采取这样的行为，将来会导致怎样的后果。所以我们时时刻刻都是以戒律为依据来指导我们当下的行为。所以对于我们而言，业就是业和业会产生业果，你采用什么样的行为会产生什么样的后果。
So how we act, what's in our mind when we act? Are we acting from hatred, lust, from a sense of self, or are we acting in a way that's of more benefit to other people, from a sense of no self? That's really key. Now once again, in explaining the way all of these things work together. If you look at the going from ignorance to karma, which is action, which is intention, fabrication, memory, mental formation, all of those things, it precedes consciousness. Now, if you think about it, how can that be? How can you act without consciousness? How would you have any understanding of your own faculties. It really wouldn't make sense unless you understand that this is a dynamic process and that ignorance is ignorance from time without beginning. And it is a force that has conditioned karma and everything else in this cycle so that consciousness really is present when a karmic act, a mental formation is made. Because we're making a decision. I want this. I need this. I have to have this. This is the solution to my problem. That kind of action and reaction, that is intention and karma.
所以我们在讲到业的时候， 我们一般在讲当下采取了怎样的行为行动，而这些采取当下采取这些行动的后面你的动机又是什么。我们可以看到这从第一步到第三步是怎么相互联系、相互影响、相互运作的。比如说很难想象任何人会采取任何的行动而没有意识，所以一般来说你肯定会有一个意识，你想要怎么样然后才会去做。然后在这个意识存在之前，其实已经有了第一步，就是我们无始以来的无明，以及第二步，就是说由这些无明所造成的一些行为，就是你有这样一种做某种事情的倾向性，这样一种方向，所以由第一第二步加起来，然后造成了你存在了这样一种意识，然后才会具体落实到行为再去做。
Generally, we're not really aware of what's in our minds, what we're feeling, what's motivating us when we act, because of this, the operation of these 12 links, because of the way our minds have been conditioned through time immemorial. And we often, as I just said with karma, we often have things backwards.Now, an interesting quote, I heard a talk by Alan Watts, a very early introducer of Buddhism to America. And he was talking about how it's a very common phrase in English that we hear all the time, is that seeing is believing, right? Two chairs there that are empty, you know, I see it, I believe it, I know it, right?But what Alan Watts said is it's backwards. It's believing is seeing, right? Believing is seeing. You wouldn't be seeing things in the way that you did. You wouldn't be reacting to things in the way that you did if there wasn't a whole belief system, a whole conditioned apparatus working in our minds that are narrowing the way that we really see the world, so that we're just seeing the world from our own selfish interests.
所以在通常情况下我们众生在日常生活中在运作的时候是没有意识到自己的心念到底是如何的，是起了什么样的念头，这个念头背后的动机又是什么。通常我们是没有这些清楚的意识的。就像我们之所以没有这样清楚意识，是因为这十二因缘就像预装了，在我们人的生活过程就像一套预装的程序一样，我们已经按照预装的程序在运作。正如有一位叫 Alan Watts 的这样一个介绍佛，最早从这个东方介绍佛教到西方的这样一个学者曾经说过，我们经常会听说这样一个俗语叫做眼见为实，就是说比如说我看到了眼前有两个空的椅子，我相信有两个椅子，并且他们没有人坐，是空的。但实际上呢你的心真正的运作方式呢，是说你首先已经有了一套预装的程序，你有了这样在这样一套预装程序下，你才会看的才会以你的方式来看到这个现象的存在。所以就是说首先是感觉，就像首先是有了这样一套预装程序之后，你才能真正的以你的方式去看到，以你的方式去对外界进行接触。
So as it's getting closer to the end, I want to finish by talking about practical ways of understanding and using these 12 links, because this is a very important part of our practice. And as I have continued to say, it's not abstract philosophy. It's not just something to talk about. It's something that is useful. So the first way that we can really understand and use these 12 links and become aware of them is especially in this area of from feeling, craving, and clinging. We can, we can, with a mindful attitude, we can become aware of when things arise in our mind. One thought, sometimes, just if you're on a diet and the thought arises, I would like to get some pizza, right? If you are mindful of that, you can skip the meal. You don't have to be a slave to your thoughts. And of course, if you're contemplating some act that is a lot worse than eating pizza, you don't necessarily have to follow through. You can cut things off at the butt, and with the idea of the four noble exertions of cutting off bad thoughts and keeping them away and generating good, helpful thoughts and sustaining them.
既然演讲这个讲座快要到结束的时候了，所以我想讲一下十二因缘法是我们如何可以用到日常生活当中，如何对我们有所益处。这一个呢主要是从第八步和第九步这两个环节来讲。比如说如果我们能够在日常生活中能够经常练习打坐呀，有这样一种意识，能够清楚地知道自己心念产生的过程的话，那么比如说你有一天突然起了一个念头，你说我非常想吃，想点披萨饼，然后呢你下一步你就知道，哦，这只是一个念头，我并不一定要顺着我这个念头就马上去买披萨了。你可以说 OK， 我有这样一个念头起来，但是我不一定要吃披萨，我可以吃其他的。在这种状态下，你就在这一层面，就在这个爱，在欲望起来这个层面就把它断了，你没有进一步的让这个念头主宰你，然后让你进行到第接下一步的行为，这样就会有所帮助。
The method that I just mentioned is a very traditional understanding of the 12 links and is a very useful method that can be used in everyday life at every moment. There, we also have Chan methods that we can use. We have the teachings of silent illumination and Hua To. And what we're doing with those methods is we are perceiving the pure mind, the true mind, beginner's mind, true mindfulness in and of itself, a mind that is not fundamentally caught up in these links. And this is a mind that is naturally clear and unobstructed. This is what the methods of Chan help us with. And this is seeing the mind as it is, formless, not describable in thoughts, feelings, or concepts. And in this mind, all the 12 links don't have to be operative at all. And as Guo Xingfasher said in a talk just a few weeks ago, the Chan method is also not to even get caught up in the first step of delusion, of a world of duality. It's really to be aiming for and aware of the non-dualistic world, the pure mind.
当然呢，十二因缘法是一个非常有用的一个方法，我们可以在日常生活中用，但是呢，我们也可以，当然也可以用禅宗的方法，用默照和话头的方法，来让我们能够进一步体验真心它的存在运作的方式。所谓真心，就是说非常纯净的这样一种心，它并不会被任何现象所迷惑，不会纠结于任何一个。任何十二因缘中的任何一个环节纠结于，把你的真心纠结在那一个方面，而不能够知道事物的真相。真心应该是一种很难用语言表达的，是一种没有任何形状的一种状态。当然进入国行法师给我们最近讲的一个讲座，真心最高的状态就是说连第一环节这个无明都不会起来，就是不是以二元对立的角度来看待这个世界，而是清清楚楚的知道所有的一切都是在没有 对立的，没有二元对立，没有能所的这样一种状态中在运作，不让你的真心被任何外界现象所困惑，所迷惑。
We talk about habitual tendencies in Buddhism, these sort of conditioned responses that are so deep within us. And when you look at them from the point of view of the 12 links, you can see how formidable they are and how deep, as the Buddha said in his discussion of the 12 links, how very deep this stuff is embedded. And it's very good to be mindful of that. And so in contemplating these 12 links, in understanding and in practicing, just as a general rule, you can see that when you tell somebody something, there's a very good chance they're really not going to hear exactly what you're saying and the way that you say it. And it's good to be aware of that. It's also good to be aware of that when somebody tells you something, you may not be hearing it that clearly. You're going to apprehend the knowledge out of your own self-interest, right? Until such time as we're very clear about all of this.
我还想提到的是，我们在学十二因缘法时，我们要意识到我们的习性是非常的顽强的，是非常盘根错节，跟我们日常生活是盘根错节的联系在一起。这就是为什么佛陀说十二因缘法是非常非常深奥的，因为十二因缘法能够让我们意识到，当别人在跟我们讲话，在给别人跟我们告诉我们一件事情的时候，其实我们并不一定真正的听到他那个人想要告诉我们的事情，并不是以他所希望的方式听到的，因为我们在运作的过程中始终是以我的角度出发，是以我的方式，我的预装的程序在听对方说话。而同样，当我们想要告诉对方一件事情的时候，我们也要意识到对方不一定就真正听到了我想要说的那个意思，或者是我想要说的方式。因为我们都没有开，我们都是以自我的角度出发，都已经被预装了一套程序在那边运作，所以都不是很清楚了知事物实相的。
So I'd like to close with a quote from Nagarjuna, which is very relevant to what we're talking about. And Nagarjuna said, "You are not the same or different from the conditions on which you depend." You are neither severed from nor fused with them. This is the deathless teaching of the Buddhas who care for the world. When Buddhas don't appear and their followers are gone, the wisdom of awakening still bursts forth by itself.
在最后呢，我想以龙树菩萨跟我们分享的一段话结束今天的讲座。你存在的前提条件，你并不是同一个人，或者说不同的人，就从你存在的条件出发，你并不是完全和你存在条件一样的人，也并不是完全和你存在条件不一样的人。你并没有离开缘起，你并没有离开你存在的条件，但是呢，你又不完全是你所存在的条件，这就是佛陀永远这个跨世纪的经典传教。当佛陀不在，或者他的追随者也没有的时候，如果你能明白缘起本身的意义，那么你自然会开悟。
Okay, so that's the conclusion. I want to thank everyone for coming. I don't know if anyone has any questions. Be happy to entertain them.
今天的讲座就到这里啊，如果大家有什么问题的话，欢迎可以问我。
Well, the relationship of Bob asked of the five skandhas to dependent origination. As I was saying, one is the way I was characterizing it is the five skandhas are who we are, and the 12 links are how we got that way. And within the 12 links, every single one of the skandhas are there. The only one that you have to work on a little is shang for perception. which you can attribute in a number of different places. But everything that constitutes us is in the 12 links.
刚刚 Robert 部长有一个问题，就是说五蕴跟十二因缘法到底是什么样一个关系？然后 Harry 的解释是，五蕴就是说构成了我们是谁，我们就是由五蕴构成的。然后十二因缘法是讲我们怎么会这样构成的，我们为什么这样构成，是这样提供了一套理论。实际上在十二因缘法的每一个环节都有五蕴的存在。当然有一些环节你需要要深入的想一下才能够让这个理论能够打通。
Anyone else?
还有没有其他问题？
没有。Okay.